This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fuel. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Tosche Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
From the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Tosche Station Radio, the bright center of the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and fiancé, Nancy.
Hi.
On today's episode, we're discussing 2013 and the expanded universe. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. Hey, with us today is staff writer Bria. Hello, Bria.
Hey everyone, it's me again.
Staff writer and host of Women of Odd Enthusiasms, Bria. Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
And before we get too much further, a note from our sponsors. Tosche Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Tosche-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast. And if you're in the mood for some awesome geek gear, they still have a 40% off all sci-fi merchandise. So if you need some gifts or for others or gifts for yourself, go to the blog and head over to Her Universe to buy some stuff. That awesome Battlestar Galactica sweatshirt. That would really
comfy.
I would really like a Star Wars version of it. But yeah.
I can't wait for those Star Wars cardigans. It's going to make gift buying so easy.
Me too.
I'm so sad they're not coming out until the spring.
Oh, I know.
It would be the perfect Christmas gift.
Well, it's mostly because everyone was going on about how, oh, yay, they can wear the Doctor Who one to work. And I'm like, no, I can't. It has the British flag on it. I'll get in trouble.
Too bad. And with that, it's time for what's new on the blog. And we start with Bria making more poor life choices. Bria, why don't you tell us what your new project is?
The Hondo Caravan.
The Hondo Caravan.
I mean, after we went with the Walrus Express, you know, we had to stick with the theme here.
Hondo is a better mascot than Waru by far.
Hondo is a much better mascot than Waru.
Hondo sounds much less painful than Walrus.
Yes.
But basically, it's going to be me blogging my way through the Clone Wars show. I haven't seen basically any of the show before. So instead of me dreading episodes, except for possibly the finale, you'll just get pure non-biased thoughts with plenty of snark and gifs.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to this.
We won't say no to snark, though.
No.
Oh, there's always snark.
Well,
please.
You have to be snarky about a lot of the Clone Wars.
My
especially,
life is snark.
Especially the Poison Snapple episodes. Those were not good.
Oh, I can't. Bria, I need to watch the Poison Snapple episode with you so we can blog about that together.
Oh, dear. I hope it's not in season one.
No, it's not.
It's not.
Okay.
But when you get there, you and I will blog that episode together. It will be delightful.
And the only spoiler I will give you is that Hondo is awesome.
That was helpful, thank you.
The one episode of the Clone Wars that friend of the show and uber Clone Wars fan Brian Young utterly, utterly detests.
That is saying a lot.
Yeah.
And I am right with him there on that one. I mean, I love the show, but that episode. What's a comparable episode of bad television? Beer bad?
No.
Oh, dear.
No. It's
worse?
Yeah.
Worse.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is terrifying.
Well, the good thing is it's only 22 minutes long, so.
And most of the show isn't that bad.
Are you trying to, like, make me regret my life decisions here?
No, yes. You get Hondo, you get Asajj Ventress, who kicks ass. She's awesome. Who else?
You get Ahsoka, who grows the metaphorical beard at some point through the show.
Obi-Wan being sassy.
Oh, yes. There is a lot of sassy Wan Kenobi.
There's an entire arc of Obi-Wan being sassy.
I'm excited. I'm also excited to eventually read one of the tie-in books because my fellow Alderaan fangirl has assured me it will give me a lot of Bail Organa feelings.
Is it the one where he carries Obi-Wan on his back or something?
Yes.
Okay. Going on, what else is on new on the blog? Bria also went over the year 2013 in the expanded universe, which we will be getting to later.
That's what we do on this podcast now. We just outsource all of our discussion points to Bria.
We tease for later. And Brian and I did a go, no go for Ender's Game. We both gave it a go, kind of a hesitant go.
I think it was the most hesitant go we've ever given. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes.
And today Brian put up a review for the Haynes Death Star Owner's Technical Manual by Ryder Windham, Chris Reef, and Chris Javas.
So I guess real quick on that one, if you're picking up this book expecting it to be like your dad's your mother's really worn Haynes manual that they use to keep their 1978 Datsun pickup running, you're going to be a little disappointed there. But if you like a great in-universe history and reference textbook, it's a lot of fun. If you enjoyed the Millennium Falcon owner's technical manual, you'll really like this one too.
So it's not going to tell me how to keep my Death Star up and running?
No, and it's not going to tell you how to repair a tractor beam that's been shut off either.
Man.
But,
what good is it?
It's got a lot
is
of pretty...
Is it going to tell me how to defend the thermal exhaust port?
Yeah, put a grate on it. but there's a lot of pretty pictures and pretty cutaways there, and folks at Del Rey or Lucas Books, if you're listening, I will buy a print of that Death Star cutaway and frame it.
Do they have an X-Wing fighter technical manual yet?
Not yet, but I hope that's in the works, because I really want that book, too.
You do? You would want that book?
I would want that book. And
Bria, are you as shocked as I am by that?
You can see it on my face, how shocked I am.
Oh, and also today, Bria reviewed the Star Wars number 3. Is it only once a month coming out, that one?
Yeah, that's how most comics are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. Cause
actually, I have to plug for this book for a moment because I am enjoying it way more than I thought I was going to. I went into it going, okay, I guess I'll review this because why the heck not? And it has pretty artwork. And it's sort of reached a whole new level of, okay, this is solidly enjoyable. Not just because the sass levels were off the chart in this book, in this issue, but it's good. You guys should try it.
I think I've said that when it comes out in like trade or whatever, I'll probably get a copy of it and read it. Just for the novelty factor of it. And I'm really excited to have the eventual episode 7 comic first draft. Oh, and so that's what's been on the blog.
And with that, it's Fixer's Flash time, where we regale you with all with tales of the geeky and mundane things we've been up to since we last got together for this fireside chat. Nancy, what have you been up to?
Fireside chat?
Yeah, that's what we're going to call it now, a fireside chat. You got a problem with that?
Okay.
No fire.
I know.
Yet.
I finished Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell, I started it last week, was not expecting to finish it as quickly as I did, but apparently I really liked it because I read it quickly. And it's pretty good. I really liked it. I would write a review for it if I wasn't busy writing other things right now. But suffice it to say, if you are listening to this podcast, you will probably find something to relate to in this book because it's all about fandom, and the main character writes fan fiction. And there are some really interesting discussions about fan fiction and if it's real writing, and the main character is taking a fiction writing class and she's talking about how she can't write original fiction because she can't create her own world. She can only get into ones that already exist. And I was going, yeah, I've had those discussions with myself before. but it's pretty good. I would recommend it. And warning though, if you have any sort of abandonment issues, you may break down crying during certain parts of the book, which I did. It was not fun. And I cannot write a review because I'm still working on Nano, and it's coming along.
I'll bug you to do a go no go when Nano Edmo rolls around next month.
I could do a go no go now, just like write a short little paragraph.
Yeah, we could do that.
But
look
for
that sometime soon.
But yeah, I think as of today I should have over 14,000 words. But considering I should have like 80,000, it's not really that great. And we watched Thor last night because a certain movie is coming out this weekend. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Thor: The Dark World. So we watched Thor last night. I spent the majority of the time going, man, Loki, you're cranky.
Asgard is so pretty.
It really is. And I also spent a lot of time going, what did they do to Idris Elba's voice?
They put him through the Christian Balinator.
I think they did, because he did not sound like himself at all. As we said before, we saw Ender's Game this weekend.
Yes, we did. We went and saw Ender's Game with our Wrong Opinions About Movies sister podcast friends.
Yes.
Ender's Game. Well, like we mentioned, we gave it a very hesitant go.
Yes.
In go, no
go. I think I was more go than you were.
I was just barely a go on that.
I have a very soft spot for Ender's Game, as I think most people who are fans of science fiction probably do. I didn't read it until I was a lot older than most people usually read it when they're like teenagers and stuff.
But it's the formative teenage science fiction
I was
book.
In my 20s when I read it, but I still loved it. And I really like it because on the outside, it's just another military science fiction book, but it's not. It's got a lot more stuff in it than that. And I liked a lot about the movie. I loved the battle room scenes. They were amazing. And I would have wanted an entire movie of just the battle room, because I could never imagine those scenes when I was reading the book. And I saw the battle room and I'm like, yes, that's what it's supposed to look like. I'm actually really excited to go back and read the book with that in my head now. The end wasn't that great. I think you and I both had problems with
the ending. Felt exceedingly tacked on, and it really brushed over the most important part of the entire book. Ender's Game, the film, to me was a prime example of why you cannot straight adapt prose fiction.
No, you can't.
This was a movie that needed to be significantly less faithful to the book.
Yeah, I agree. But another thing I thought was really good about the book is that the cast was very diverse, because it's the International Fleet, and it actually looked like the International Fleet. And the main cast, they've got the adults, they've got Harrison Ford, who's cranky Harrison Ford, and
a movie that actually calls for ornery Harrison Ford.
Viola Davis, who I really like. I like her in general, and I hope she does more science fiction, because that would be awesome. And Ben Kingsley was in it too. And but yeah. Oh, and I don't know the actor's name, but the actor who played Sergeant Dapp was awesome and hilarious, and I liked him a lot. But yeah, I've heard people say they really like it. I've heard people say they despise it.
I come down way more in the middle.
Yeah. But it's just really, what's the word I'm looking for? It's really unfortunate that a book slash movie with the themes that it has and the diversity that it has is tainted by the person who created it.
So we should probably have a quick discussion of how occasionally you have to separate the art from the artist.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you learn about art and music and literature and, you know, school and college, and a lot of them are written and created by, you know, terrible human beings. But now we're at a point where we know more about the people who create the art that we consume, and we can make decisions about whether or not we want to support them. For me, it was more of a, I really love this book and I want to see it as a movie. And the fact that there were lots and lots more people involved in making the movie made it easier to make that choice to me to go see the movie. Also, the fact that usually when, you know, authors are paid for movie, they're kind of paid
lump sum.
Yeah.
They don't get any additional royalty.
Yeah. I doubt I would buy another book of Orson Scott Card's ever again.
I know.
Unless
I
it
wouldn't.
Was, well, actually, no, that's not true, because I don't have a copy of Speaker for the Dead, and I would want one of those.
Yeah, Speaker for the Dead is one of the most profound philosophical science fiction books of the last 30 years. It's strange that a person with the beliefs of Orson Scott Card was the one who managed to write it.
I don't know how that's possible.
But this is that is perhaps the best example of how you have to separate the artist from the art, because Speaker for the Dead is an incredible piece of science fiction philosophy.
Like, Speaker for the Dead is something I would have my kid read, because it's all about, like, understanding other people and that sort of thing, and, like, it's a big part of Ender's Game too, which is why it's like so weird that they came from the same person who gives money to anti-gay organizations. So I don't understand how that works. Yeah. But I don't mind when authors and creators talk about things that are important to them. But there are so many times I just wish Orson Scott Card would shut up.
Yeah, so my quick 20-second disclaimer on the Ender's Game film is I would not want to tell you what you should do in regards to seeing it. If your feelings about Orson Scott Card are strong enough that it precludes you from seeing the film, by all means, don't go see it. If you're more willing to separate the artist from the art, go check it out. It's not a great film, but
it's not terrible. I didn't think it was terrible. And also, like, don't tell people they're awful for going to see Ender's Game also.
Because both you and I struggled internally for a long time before we ultimately went and saw it.
And we're going to offset our ticket price to a charity.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, that's our take on Ender's Game. Go, if you want to go see it or are thinking about it, go ahead, because if you do, you might help get a better, or a book by
John Scalzi
made into a movie. We want Old Man's War made into
a
movie.
I really do.
So, yes, that's our vested interest in that. Bria, you still there?
Yeah, I was taking a short little nap. No worries.
Brian,
you just took my water bottle.
I know, because my water bottle was empty. Nancy just
you
gave me the
bird. You guys are tragic.
I'm gonna go get one.
You're tragic, really. Oh, okay. So I haven't been doing much because I've been very busy because I just started a new part of my job, so it's been crazy. But what I've been doing, I've been doing a lot of Duolingo, so that counts as nerdy because it's practicing languages, I guess. It's a really cool app if you want to learn languages, by the way. And then aside from that, I went to a comic book signing a couple weeks ago with Kelly Sue DeConnick and Emma Rios for Pretty Deadly, which, let me tell you, Kelly Sue DeConnick is awesome, and I love her.
Is she as wonderful in person as she appears to be on Twitter and Tumblr?
She is, and I think she's actually, like, Nancy-sized, because I was not expecting her to be that tiny.
Kelly Sue DeConnick is Nancy-sized. There's one of your quotes for the day.
Hey!
Except, well, if you look at the picture of me and her, she has on, like, 5-inch spiked heels in that picture. It was pretty, wow. it was pretty cool. She could walk in them too. I was super impressed.
That is impressive.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't like skinny stilettos, but they were like serious business boot heel thingies. It was pretty cool. She's very nice. And then aside from that, I've been pretending I know how to write, and I've been attempting to do Nano. It's day 6, so expect me to give up in about another 5-6 days. That's how Nano usually works for me. And then aside from that, I am excited to go see Thor 2 tomorrow because it is Thor's Day.
Yay!
Happy Thor's Day, everyone.
It'll be fabulous.
So,
changing in a Thor, I believe my comment on Twitter was, "How are those abs even possible?" I don't understand.
I love Natalie Portman's line.
Yeah.
Where she's like, is this how you usually look?
Yeah.
It's a good look.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Brian.
Oh, Bria, quick question. I didn't see Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last night.
It was so good.
I've heard that. Am I going to enjoy this episode?
It was very good. I'll give you a warning. Watch out for the feels.
Uh-oh.
Because you're about to discover some BFF Fitzsimmons feels you didn't know you had
then. Oh, no. Did Whedon do his thing?
No spoilers, Brian!
I wouldn't be able to say, because it's not Joss Whedon who's, you know, the main showrunner. So I couldn't tell you.
I mean, Jed. Jed has pulled some
no spoilers,
on
Brian.
Me in the past.
Shh. I haven't seen it either.
Can you note, I was avoiding it. I was avoiding answering the question, Brian, in a clever and vaguely witty way.
Duly noted. And with that,
Wait. On an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. note, they're bringing in Victoria Hand, and I am so freaking excited, it's ridiculous.
Is that confirmed?
There were pictures of her on Tumblr.
Oh, dear Victoria Hand, I am so excited!
Yes!
Can you explain to the comics illiterate?
Go for it, Bria.
Sure. Okay, so there was an event called Dark Reign where, don't ask why, it's too complicated to explain, but Norman Osborn was in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D., which he renamed Hammer.
The look on Nancy's face right now as you said that.
It was renamed Hammer?
Yes.
God. Okay.
Because the hammer is Norman's.
Wait, what?
You just went there, didn't you?
I totally just
the
went
hammer
there.
Is Norman's?
The Hammonds is Norman's there. Dot dot dot. You've seen
Dr. Horrible. It's a Captain.
No, I haven't.
Hammer joke. Think about it.
Brian just dropped a
shot. Brian, educate her at some point, please.
We're gonna have to fix that.
Really?
But yes.
Anyways, okay,
Hammer.
So Victoria Hand. She ends up being one of the people who's in charge of formerly S.H.I.E.L.D., now Hammer. And she's like the head bitch in charge. am I allowed to say that? Oh, well.
Yes.
You just did.
She gets stuff done. And she's just awesome. She's also like one of the few lesbian characters in comics. So I really hope that carries over the show. But there's various points where she's working with the Avengers and she just has a giant ass gun and just shoots everything. And it's beautiful and nothing hurts. And Victoria Hand is fabulous.
So yeah, Victoria Hand, awesome. I'm excited.
Everyone should be excited.
Be excited. And it really does feel like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is coming into its own. So all of you who wrote the show off after two episodes, come on,
Suck it.
Come on. Okay. And with that, it's time for Deke's Dirt News and Rumors from Around Fandom. And we've got a whole lot of nothing. Let's see. What's the Spaceballs quote?
We ain't found shit.
Found shit.
Yeah, seriously. There's some rumors about casting calls. I don't know if they're rumors or actually confirmed, but casting calls in the UK and the US.
So this week's rumors, the same as last week's rumors.
Yep, pretty much. We don't have news. And Janice Barbie, who is a Disney exec and has an unfortunate last name, tweeted that episode 7, or as he called it, Star Wars 7, will be coming, quote-unquote, end 2015.
And then he later said, whoa, guessing.
That could change. Personally, I would be more weirded out by a Star Wars movie not coming out in May than a Star Wars movie not having the Fox fanfare in front of it. Because that's when Star Wars movies come out.
Other movies will get out of the way for Star Wars.
Yeah, seriously.
And there's a bit of Marvel news that I think Bria wants to talk about.
I put this in here just for you, Bria.
Aw, thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Okay, so Marvel announced yesterday that there will be a new character taking over the mantle of Ms. Marvel.
Who was Carol Danvers, Ms. Marvel.
Yes, who was Carol Danvers.
Who is now
Danvers.
Captain
and
Marvel.
Is, go ahead.
Nope, floor
is
now
Captain
now.
Marvel.
Yes.
Okay. Anyways, the new character is going to be a Muslim shape-shifting teenager whose name is Kamala Khan, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And she looks fabulous and awesome. I'm so excited, especially because the current writing team they announced is G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. And Alfona is basically a god, especially when it comes to drawing teenage superhero characters. So everyone should go pick up this book when it comes out in February.
So it really does seem like Marvel has sat down and adopted the stance. You know, we feel like everyone should be welcome to see representation of who they are in our works. Meanwhile, over at DC...
I read about it, and I thought it was neat that they said that she kind of worships Carol Danvers. So that'll be kind of
so
cool.
The Carol corpse is now canon.
Basically,
that's the best thing ever. I am so excited to pick up the new Ms. Marvel, and the rest of you should be too. Go support a great, great, great concept, and go pick up the first issue when it comes out.
I like the fact that she's a shapeshifter.
Yeah, that's something new at least new for this. So that should be interesting to see. Oh, and just as my little one side tangent, if anyone out there is saying, well, she's the first Muslim superhero that we've gotten. No, you're wrong. She's not. She's not the first Muslim superhero from Marvel. Go look up Dust. Soraya was awesome. And that's my little mini rant. I'm done.
Remember your history, please.
Remember who you are.
Thanks, Mufasa.
Brian's face palming now.
He lives in you.
No.
Oh, dear.
You can't sing that song.
No, I can't sing that song. Okay, it's time for Cammy's Concerns before I launch into a Broadway musical bit. And we brought Bria here for a reason today, because it's time we do our look back at 2013 in the Expanded Universe. And I think we're just going to go down in chronological order and offer our thoughts on this year's releases. And things kicked off in January with Timothy Zahn's Scoundrels.
To which we all go, yay!
Hooray!
Yes, I believe it's safe to say that we all really enjoyed Scoundrels.
We did. Yeah. I think I remember sitting there going, are you too done with the book yet? Are you too done with the book yet? Hurry up.
And then we got done with the book and went, ugh.
This was before we were getting advanced copies, so it took us a while.
Well, you finished it while you were on the plane flying here in January because I told you that you were not allowed to get on the internet until you finished Scoundrels. So I'm, you know, sitting at work, minding my own business, and all of a sudden I get a G-chat going, holy flying frack Scoundrels! What the fuck? I still have that conversation saved for easy access. Because it was hilarious.
I think we're past spoilers? The moratorium on spoilers on that book.
Yes, I think
so. Okay, yeah. because I just remember that as far as the twist ending goes.
You know what? Actually, for the remainder of this podcast, so we can do it properly, if you do not want spoilers on any of these books,
get out, and come back when you're done.
Go read them all.
Yes.
Or actually, no, don't read them all. Don't do that to yourself.
Because if we're going to do this chat properly, we're going to talk spoilers.
Yes.
Are you all gone? Okay. What I was going to say before, you know, is that I remember that me and then some of our other friends, like, I think I finished the book first. And then we were just slowly someone else would finish it next. And then we would just start this, like, group email thread or whatever the heck it was going, yeah, the ending. Boba Fett. And then finally, Brian finished it.
I was the last.
I just now turned around my computer to show Brian the G-chat with this, and it's holy flying frack Scoundrels.
Okay, what? Now we've used our laudable F-bomb, so you'll self-censor
said
that.
Frack. It, that's what you wrote.
I know.
What? I just, what? How? But? What? And then he went on to say, this is the only non-offensive use of Boba Fett ever in the EU.
Sorry, Boba Fett fans.
Yeah. What I like...
I will say best use of Boba Fett across all mediums this year.
I've read many people who didn't like the twists because they couldn't figure it out. However, that's why I liked it.
So those people shouldn't read The Icarus Hunt.
No, they could not.
No, because Zahn is really good at it. Because you can figure it out when you go back and read it. But it's really hard for you to figure things out the first time around. And I think people don't like that because they want to figure things out and be smart. That's why I read Zahn, is because I want to feel dumb because he's so much smarter than I am. But like when it was like 3 pages to go, and I remember people saying that there was a twist, and I thought I had gotten to that already. And I was like, but that's not a big deal. And then like, when the protocol droid came up to him and referred to his high exaltedness, I sat up a little straighter in my chair and went, why is Ianger at Jabba the Hutt's place? And then they went on more and I went, like, they mentioned the Mandalorian helmet. And I went, what? And then one sentence later, it's like Boba Fett something. And I went, what?
Now, Bria, I think you enjoyed some of the cast members of this book a great deal.
A little bit. I might have been a slightly embarrassing human being when I spoke to Zahn about the book at Dragon Con. But he included Winter. I mean, also Cal, who I was also really excited about. But the fact that Winter was in the book and being awesome and had her heart broken because she didn't know that Leia was still alive at the time.
Oh my god, I know.
I had so many feelings. I can't lie. And I really like how he wrote her because, I mean, I know that sounds weird to say because, Zahn did create Winter.
So you like how the author that created Winter wrote Winter.
Well, no, because I would say that Stackpole did a heck of a lot of what I really like about Winter.
I'd agree, yeah.
Between the X-Wing comics and the X-Wing books, I feel like that's where she really, really got established, aside from being the solo kid's babysitter.
You mean the only maternal figure capable of being a maternal figure?
Yes.
Who never became a maternal figure, thanks Expanded Universe.
She totally has kids out there.
I like to think so.
That's my headcanon. I'm sticking to it.
There was some line in the end of The Unifying Force that sort of hinted at it, and I'm sticking to it. You can't tell me otherwise.
Hey, if people are telling us that all the EU is getting overwritten or whatever, then it doesn't matter. Whatever we think goes. And Winter and Tycho have kids.
Totally. And one of them should go restart Rogue Squadron with Sile.
Yes.
But anyways, that has nothing to do with Scoundrels. But I think he wrote her really well. He created a lot of really neat female, or just characters in general. I think all loved Bink and Tavia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bink and Tavia are my favorite auxiliary characters
of the
year. Passing
the Bechdel test.
Yes. They need to be in more things aside from Scoundrels and Win or Lose All.
Yes, agreed. Someone said that they couldn't tell, like, some of the characters apart, and they said they couldn't tell apart Tavia from Rochelle, and I'm like, what the hell is your problem? They're completely different characters.
What?
I don't understand. Yeah. How?
I'm like, Tavia is the meek one who wants to, like, get her sister to stop being a thief, well, as Rochelle is the one who gets everything.
No, read the book again.
Yeah.
And then say wrongness and be wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, it was great.
Oh, such a great cast. Great cast in the book. All a bunch of great, unique voices. And they all just worked well together. And who doesn't want Ocean's 11 in Star Wars?
And also, thank you, Timothy Zahn, for remembering that Lando Calrissian exists and is awesome.
And deserves to be written as such.
Yep. So we all like Scoundrels. Yep. You should read it.
Scoundrels, great. I think it's out in paperback now.
Yep.
Go get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yes. Go.
No, it's not. Annihilation just came out paperback. I don't think Scoundrels is out yet.
Okay, then go get it in hardback.
It's coming out soon, though.
It's almost the season for gift buying.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the second big EU release of the year. I only skimmed this one. So Bria can speak more to it.
I didn't read it because I have no interest in
The Last Jedi, which is a book that I think both you and I had higher expectations for.
You can't see this, but I'm literally face-palming right now with that book.
Oh.
Months later, and I'm still face-palming. I apparently drew the short straw / Brian knows that he can email me and go, hey, want to review this book? And I'll say yes. And he'll go, great. And he'll throw the digital file at me.
Don't worry. I'm doing lockdown. So you don't have to worry about that.
The Last Jedi was beyond disappointing. If you like Jax Pavin, I mean, I guess you'll like the book. If you like books with, you know, variety of characters, people not named Jax Pavin. And Brian, can I refer to the book as I had it in my notes back in February that you read?
Yes.
It's a sausage fest. It's a mediocre sausage fest, unfortunately. There are four out of the 13 main characters. Four of them are women. Two of them have only like minor roles, of which one of them doesn't even come in until the last quarter or so of the book. One of them has a kind of neat role in her little bit of the book. But she's unfortunately named like Sasha Swiftbird, really, really, which she had an opportunity to be a neat character. But anyways, and then the last character who we've seen since the first Coruscant Night book gets killed off. And I don't like to use the term fridged lightly, but she was fridged.
Oh.
And then used as like her ghost is there doing something for Jax. And it was not good. I mean, it's not the worst book I've ever read, but it's not something I'm going to go back to.
It's definitely not the worst book we read this year.
Oh, dear Lord, no, it's not.
And we will come back to that. But you know what? You and I had higher expectations for this book because of what these authors had written before.
Exactly. Because Michael Reeves, he wrote the MedStar books.
They were great.
They're great. And he wrote freaking Barisophie as being amazing, and it's part of the reason why I love her so much. And then he turns around and does this, and I was like, really? Really? That's how I really feel about this book.
This was, yeah. It's like if Matthew Stover were to come back and right, I don't know, four Mandalorians having a sausage fest of an adventure. It'd be a letdown. Although Matthew Stover could probably find a way to make that work.
No comment.
And with that, we go into a book that you certainly liked a whole lot more. Dawn of the Jedi,
yes.
Into the Void.
It's actually sort of fitting that you mentioned Stover because it gave me a very Stover feel. Into the Void is probably one of the creepier feeling books I've read in a while. And it has the same sort of vibe as Shatterpoint, where you look at the weirder and the creepier and like the more messed up side of the Force. And then you add in some Jedi and it's just awesome. I mean, the book doesn't get like 5 out of 5 stars for me because it's not always the most exciting writing style or sentence structure and all, but it's pretty good. And it features a brand new female. I don't know how you pronounce the old version of Jedi.
Jedi. Which always makes me think of the Vong.
Yeah. Let me tell you, writing something with both those was really confusing. I had to keep looking it up. But no, it's a good book. There's parts of it that are very unsettling. I enjoyed that about it because it made me think of Depa Bilba and Shatterpoint by Stover.
Well, unsettling can work if you use it in moderation and don't go overboard.
Yeah, no, but it's a good sort of unsettling. I mean, it's a good sort of unsettling to read about.
Yeah, I mean, any of the elements that we occasionally criticize, when done in moderation, work well, and this is certainly a book that sounds like it's done that.
Yeah, it was well done. It's really neat to see the Jedi in, you know, when they're still carrying around actual swords and not lightsabers, because, hey, you don't see that every day. I've been told that apparently if you read the comics, it helps build the world and make it that much cooler. I haven't gotten to the comics yet, but I would definitely recommend the book.
So yes, Into the Void, that's another recommendation that you can get for your various holiday purchasing when that time rolls around. And yeah, my personal philosophy, holiday purchasing doesn't start until Santa shows up at the Macy's Day Parade, but that's another conversation.
No, you can buy Christmas presents before then.
Okay.
Right, because I already have.
And that brings us all together now. Heavy sigh.
Are we talking God about Crucible now?
We're talking about Crucible now.
I can't even. I'm going to throw my hands up in the air and say, just go read my damn Tumblr PowerPoint because I can't even about this book anymore.
I'll start off by saying that I had written a blog post when the news of Crucible came out, urging people to give the book a chance. Because there were several things about it that I thought sounded promising. Mainly the fact that it was a big three book, and although they had been starring in most of the series, I liked the idea of a standalone book with them in it together, thinking that they would be in it together. And then when we got the blurb, I saw that like Luke and Leia were going to be working to rescue Han, and I thought, that's awesome! There's not enough good Luke and Leia interaction in the expanded universe. And instead, we got
400 pages of fight scenes.
400 pages of torture porn and Visara being someone else, literally and figuratively.
And Murtagev inexplicably in a slinky black dress.
And
don't even get me started.
A scene at the Jedi Academy in which I literally wanted to jump through my Kindle and say, Luke, what the fuck? I'm sorry, I said the F word again. What is wrong with you? What? Who are you?
Congratulations, you made Corrin Horn the most sensible person in the room.
When I got to that
part. You made Corrin Horn the only person not acting arrogant.
When I got to that part, I highlighted it with my Kindle with like some exclamation points and was like, Corrin Horn cannot be logical. What are you doing?
Was there anything about this book we liked? Anything?
I laughed a few times. That's pretty much it.
The first chapter wasn't that bad.
No, but of course they had to talk about the cantina.
Yeah, I mean, the first chapter started out okay. Then the second chapter happened.
And can we talk about my favorite part about the book?
Are we using favorites with air quotes?
Yeah.
Okay.
My favorite part about the book is that Ben is working with freaking Tahiri.
I about snapped my Kindle in two.
Who thought that was... Wait, okay. No. I know the answer to this question. Troy Denning thought that was a good idea, but Troy Denning also thought that having Tahiri basically molest Ben was a good idea, too. So that answers my question.
Okay, so let's get real for 1 second.
Oh, dear.
Yes, I get the themes of redemption. I get it.
But you could have her work with someone else.
There are real-world connotations, however, real-world context that you cannot divorce.
No.
From your story.
Like, people were saying, well, Ben... It shows that Ben forgave her. No, Ben forgave her in the book that it happened in, and that's great. Good for you, Ben. However, Luke Skywalker is the head of the Jedi Order, and Ben is his son, and I think he can have some say-so about who he's working with. And if Luke is going to be, like, mean old Luke and say this kid has too much of a temper to be in the Jedi Order... Why would he let Tahiri anywhere near his son? Like, I'm sorry.
That's logic.
Yeah. Like, even Luke Skywalker, and I'm talking about Luke Skywalker actually from the movies, not the books, I think would have an issue with that. And that's not saying she can't be a Jedi. She can be a Jedi no matter what. You know, I mean, great. You know, she's back on the straight and narrow. Although I thought at the end of Apocalypse or whatever, she was going to be working for Jack.
What? Troy Denning abandoned another plotline? No.
But no, they wrapped that one up because was working for Jag. And then they're like, and then Jag threw the...
Oh, right, because Jag had to go join the Jedi because, or else he has no reason to be in the story.
Oh, let's talk about other things said this year.
No, because then this podcast will never end.
Sorry, I have to go find the Tumblr post now.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Crucible was not good. It had creepy Leia. Which actually is referred to in the book as Creepy Leia.
I love that people kept saying, stop calling, you know, it's not fair to call her Creepy Leia. And they'd be like, no.
That's what it's called in the book.
Is that.
I'm sorry. It said this so right there explicitly. Creepy Leia.
I will say this. When they started doing the torture sabacc, I was really interested in the whole, like, psychological angle. And when they asked... Han, like, why did he love Anakin better than Jason and stuff like that? And I'm like, ooh, this could be interesting. But then it wasn't.
No, because that would have gotten in the way of gouging out someone's eye.
Yes.
Again.
Can we discuss that pain was literally a game in this?
No, it was
like... I can't even. It was like Saw, but
I'm wondering
in Star
if
Wars
he just. I'm wondering if Troy Denning just said, "Ah, screw it all. I'm gonna make this crazy as I can, because I might not be able to do another Star Wars book ever again. So here we go.
I found the Tumblr post.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
So a quote from an interview that Troy Denning did with Pete Morrison over at Lightsaber Rattling, in which he says, and it's a good way to work, because if you're working at if you're working alone, like most authors do, it's easy to grow very myopic very quickly. A good example would be the Jaina Zek Jag love triangle of the Legacy of the Force series. I kept thinking that Jaina and Zek ought to end up together, but Aaron and a couple of editors seemed to prefer Jag. So we went back and forth about that in emails and story meetings, and eventually ended up resolving the issues I had, which were that I didn't want to see Jaina go off to live with Jag somewhere other than the Jedi Temple, because I didn't want to lose her as a character. In my view, Jaina is a vital character to the future of the whole expanded universe, and whenever anyone said that she should be with Jag, I kept having images of her being ripped from my writing life forever. I guess I was identifying with Han Solo a bit too much there. You're not going to take my daughter away. She's going to live here in my Jedi Temple forever. But once we worked out a way to bring Jag to her and make him a part of the Jedi Order, I was very happy to see Zek move on and write Jaina and Jag's wedding at the end of Apocalypse. So, Jaina can't go off, but no! We'll go change Jag's life and force him to be someone he's not so Troy gets what he wants!
I just want to narrate for the listener at home that Brian is waving his arms around and flailing very animatedly right now.
So, the level of patriarchal influence over Jaina's character.
We wonder why she hasn't been allowed to flourish.
I just had to mute my microphone for about a minute and curse. Oh. See, I'm just even more ticked off about all this now, because I was, whenever they had, I don't remember what book in Fate of the Jedi was, but when they had Tahiti going and being Jag's hand,
yeah.
I was like, this is bleeping awesome. It'd be cool. Look, the three of them are just going to rule the freaking empire. Don't worry about it. And then
they abandoned it. Because it would have taken Jaina away from the Jedi Temple, because apparently that's the only place Jaina can be.
I think she's licking people off right now, just because that's how you respond to it.
I think that we should move on.
Before I give myself
to a book
freaking aneurysm.
That we all loved. That would
be. Yeah, because I'm about to rant off a star. And Myrta.
Oh no, let's do that! I'm sorry,
oh, dear.
But that also should be addressed. The problem with how
I wish
female
they hadn't been in the book.
The problem with how female characters were treated in Crucible. This was not cool. I mean, the usual over sexualization of Leia is back again. But then there was Myrta Gev and Vistara Kai. Do you want to run down the problems there, Bria?
We'll be here all night if we do, but
let's just do the cliff notes.
Vistara had to deal with, there was all the creepy things that the whatchamacallits were saying about her and being blatantly overly sexual in regards to her. The fact that they put Myrta freaking Gev in a slinky dress. Like, this is Myrta. Myrta lives in her freaking armor. And I love her. I love her so much. I've loved her from the minute I saw her in Legacy of the Force, where she was cool, she was confident, and everything. And this is not me saying that badass ladies cannot wear dresses, because that would be wrong. But Myrta's, like, he just puts her in a dress for the hell of it. And then he's like, oh, here, go wear, like, some slinky, snazzy dealer outfit.
The way he wrote it.
When there's no reason.
The way he wrote it was just blatant fan service.
Like, I honestly would have preferred if the two of them had not been in the book.
Oh, I agree.
That would have been so much better.
I mean, okay.
Also Tahiri.
Yeah.
Tahiri's role could have been played by a new character.
Yeah, and, you know, if the book had just been a book with a really weird plot, which it was, I would have probably given it a 5 out of 10. But then we add the...
No, that ending.
Okay, maybe
Hell no.
Maybe a 4 out of 10. But then we add the Tahiri and Ben thing. Then we add the Leia sexualization stuff. Then we add the way Vistara was used. Then we add the way Mirdagev was used. And oh my goodness, I took off so many points off my review score.
And we're all just sobbing. So much sobbing and cursing.
I mean, that's the problem with Crucible. I can deal with a Waru weirdness plot. I've certainly read weirder things. But then we add in all of the social not okayness that was in this book, and it's far and away the most frustrating expanded universe novel I've read in some time.
Yup.
Wow, I got worked up over that again.
That's been happening a lot tonight, Brian.
Yeah. For those of you who didn't listen to the pre-show, there was another rant there. Listen to the pre-show. Listen to me get all fiery under the collar and mad at things. But let's regulate our blood pressure and talk about a book that we all really, really, really liked. Kenobi by John Jackson Miller.
Go read it. That's my review.
Get it. Get it now. Go get it now.
Kenobi is perfect.
Where with Crucible, where do we start with the things that we didn't like? Kenobi, where do we start with what we liked? There was so much good stuff.
We should start with Annalene.
Yes, let's start with Annalene.
Because despite what some people have said, there were three books that were headlined by female characters this year, because this was just as much Annalene Caldwell's book as Obi-Wan Kenobi's.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, Annalene might be the most three-dimensional female character introduced into the expanded universe in ages.
Yeah. You know who she reminded me of? She kind of reminded me of if Molly Weasley had to be a single mom.
Wow. Yeah, I can see that one.
And not have seven kids, but two, rather. But yeah, I really liked her and thought she was good.
Sorry,
Annalene's gesturing at me now, so that didn't sound as eloquent as I wanted it to be.
But yes, Annalene Caldwell was a fabulous character. Excellent addition to the book, and the book flat out doesn't work without her.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
I mean, it's good. I've heard some people say it's too slow, but it's the style of the book. It's a Western.
I mean, reading this was like reading the Westerns my dad collected and loved, the Louis L'Amour books. It was very much like that. A great... I don't agree at all with slow. I thought it was extremely well-paced.
Yeah,
it was a page-turner.
Yeah, I wanted to read it, and I felt like I was in the Oasis, and like just all of the depth that he went into to explain how these people lived. Like, you really felt like you were there in Tatooine. And like, I thought it was interesting because now, like, when I go and watch A New Hope, I'm like kind of envisioning the sort of life that Luke must have led before he left Tatooine, which is kind of, you know, important to his character. and also figure out, like, I mean, we all kind of knew what Ben had to have been going through after Revenge of the Sith and, you know, while he's on Tatooine watching Luke. But this book really put that front and center and made me feel really bad for him.
If you didn't feel bad for Obi-Wan before, you sure will after reading Kenobi.
Seriously.
And let me suggest, unless you hate yourself, don't watch Revenge of the Sith and then read Kenobi.
No, don't do that.
That's a terrible life decision.
And also, since we're spoiling, we will talk about the twist in this book, which was pretty amazing. That being that the Tusken war leader, Aark, is actually a female.
Hooray for John Jackson Miller making us reevaluate our gender roles and stereotypes.
Seriously, I was like, that is awesome. And then I was like, oh, man, I assumed she was a dude. I'm part of the problem. And then I went back to go through like some of the early scenes and I'm like, he didn't use she. How did I not catch that? And I think it's, and now I'm going to be reading closely when I get to his books, because I read closely when I read Zahn's books, because that's what he does.
Yeah. And Miller, so, John Jackson Miller has earned.
Yeah.
That
so
privilege.
Like when I was reading Scoundrels, I was reading really closely because of what he did in The Icarus Hunt, which if you haven't read, go read it. And I still didn't catch the twist, which, cause that's T-Sympathy's on, but this one I had no, I mean, I didn't know. And I was like, oh man, I'm part of the problem. But that was like, and then I was like, I already was really loving the book, but then it just got that much more interesting there, because instead of, it's not cause she was a female character. It was because she was not the norm. And that's what made it interesting. Because characters who are the norm are boring. And we don't want to read about them. Yep.
And Oren Gault. What a fan.
Wait, I have the crate call.
Let's hear it. I want one of those. I want one of those.
I will have to say.
Okay, I'm done. Sorry.
Oren was such a good character because you started out really kind of liking him. I even was kind of like rooting for him and Annalene to get together. I'm like they would be good. And then he turned into a raging jerk. But then at the end, I was like, oh my God, John, you didn't really do that, did you? That's like,
oh, I loved it.
I mean, I thought it was great that it was, you know, poetic and everything, but I was just like, oh, that's a fate worse than death. I don't know if I can wish that on him.
Did you just physically revolt?
Yes, I did.
When you read that chapter?
Yes, I did. Because I was like, no. It's really obvious. He did to himself what Anakin did to himself, and they're stuck in their own prisons.
I mean,
metaphors.
You see the parallels, but still, I thought I was going to be sick reading that, and that's not a bad thing. It's a testament to how well it was written.
Yeah.
But holy crap, the fate of Oren Gault.
Yeah.
Bria, I think you cut out there. Come again, Bria. We appear to have lost Bria's connection.
She got so excited about Kenobi that she couldn't handle it anymore.
I know, but
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, good.
Kind of.
Hey, have fun. What I was gonna say though is that I asked if I was just a terrible person who got all gleefully happy over what happened to
Oren. I think there was a part of me that really enjoyed his fate, but there was another equal part of me that was horrified.
Yeah. It's kind of the same.
I mean, you look at it and no, that's the only way his story could have ended, with him becoming what he most reviled.
Unless he had agreed to turn back now, which he did not.
Nope. But Jabe did.
Indeed. Bria, I'm going to bring you back into the call real quick. And while we're doing that, anything else from Kenobi worth highlighting? Hello, Bria. Welcome back.
Have fun editing.
I'm not editing.
He doesn't edit.
I don't edit. we have to talk about the meditations, don't we?
What, that they were just sad?
Yeah, shove the knife in, twist.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Oh, heartbreaking, but so good. I saw a lot of criticism that over this book because it didn't actually feature any of the third person prose from Obi-Wan's perspective, but I actually think I preferred it written this way.
I agree.
Because it was such a personal and heart-wrenching look into what was going on in Obi-Wan's head and psyche right after the fall of Coruscant. There was one line that really got you, Nancy. What was it?
It was the conversation he was having with Annalene. And she said something. She was angry, and she said something to the effect, like, you think you can come here and, I can't remember what it is, but it ended with, get Annie all excited and it's off to the races. And Obi-Wan just goes, it wouldn't be the first time. I went, oh my God, why would you do that?
Ow, my feels.
Yes. And then the last line of the book just made me cry. Literally. It's time for me to go home. Feels.
Any other thoughts from you on Kenobi, Bria?
I think we basically covered it all.
Now, one thing I really loved about this book is you can see the seedlings of why Luke's Jedi Order took the shape it did right up until Darkness Trilogy. The differences between the old Jedi Order and Luke's Jedi Order, again, right before Darkness Trilogy. And that was really neat to me, just seeing, okay, here's this bridge, and it's in this book of all places, where Ben Kenobi is musing to himself about some of the philosophical aspects of the now obliterated Jedi Order and whether or not they should ever, those aspects should ever return.
Yep.
And that's one of the neat things the book did. It was a great bridge between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope and the old Jedi Order and the new Jedi Order. So yes, we can't heap enough praises on this book. Please go buy it. It's so good. And after you buy it and read it, go listen to our interview with John Jackson Miller. Because
a cool guy to talk to.
Oh, he's one of the most fun interviews we've ever had on the show. Do go check that out. And there was one last release of the year, and this is the one where we all disagree. I think this is the most disagreement
we've... I'm just saying, I'm right on the book.
So yes, Razor's Edge by Martha Wells. Okay, Bria, Nancy, duke it out.
No, I don't want to duke it out.
Okay, so here's my thing with it, is that Razor's Edge is the first book to really get Leia right in a very long time. Despite how often I make fun of Leia for being the worst parent in the universe, I adore her character. I have a lot of ridiculous feelings about her character. I have a lot of feelings about people writing her correctly. And I think that Martha Wells nailed it, because you see, as there was one point, I can't remember the exact line, but she's talking to the people on the Alderaan ship. And she's just saying something along the lines to herself about how, she has to be strong. She can't, she can't just be a figurehead, and how, because figureheads eventually crack. And I'm going to look up that exact quote because it's going to bother me if I don't have the exact right one. But it just, to me, that whole part of it just completely encapsulated what Leia Organa is about to me. Where is it? And at one point someone goes like, I didn't think they let you do anything dangerous. And, she does. Oh, here's the line. Okay. Unlike living, breathing people, figureheads are made of stone and incapable of mistakes. Leia wasn't certain how long she could bear that weight. Which is perfect. It's Leia Leia at that time period in a nutshell. And I loved that you got her vulnerabilities. I loved chapter 3 when they come across the Alderaanian ship, and you just see the entire world around you, just that the floor falls out. She can't. She's like, just tell me where the people are. It's just, it's good. And then you also get, you know, her sexual tension with Han, which was also very appropriate for the time. She's got Leia, and that made all the difference in the world to me for that book. Also, there was actually a diverse cast, which was also beautiful, and a gender equal cast, more or less. But yeah.
See, I agree with that. I mean, I really liked her portrayal of Leia, and I liked the stuff with Han. But over than that, it was kind of more of a miss for me as far as the rest of the actual plot goes. If it had just been her writing Leia and Han, it would have been great. But I had issues I couldn't get over, and I fully own up to that. It's not you, Martha Wells. It's all me. I'm sorry.
You were more tripped up by the mechanical.
I can't do dialogue tags in front of dialogue. I can't. I'm sorry. It tears me out of the book and just makes me go, no, bad, bad. Don't do that. Don't do that. And that's kind of.
Really, Nancy?
Hmm?
Really?
Yeah.
That was your big issue
well,
with the book?
It was kind of the writing in general, though. That was part of it, but then it was just like, there were just parts I just thought it was written kind of clunkily, and like, I kind of almost felt like it was the first draft that needed to go back and get, like, polished, and I don't know, I need to read it, I think I might need to read it again, because I don't know if I just wasn't into it, and it might have, you know, affected how I thought about it later. But like, I couldn't really get into the plot. When it was the stuff with Leia and the pirate ship, I liked that a lot. But once it got to the asteroid, I was kind of like, eh. Like, it just wasn't pulling me in. And I said, it's all me, Martha Wells. I'm sorry. I feel really bad about not liking the book, as I said last week. I feel really bad.
I come down right between you two as far as my feelings on the book go. I thought it was a solid B grade book.
I mean, I wouldn't tell anyone not to read it.
Although I do think that if you're like Nancy and the mechanical aspects of writing sticks out to you more, than Razor's Edge might be a tougher read.
But it usually doesn't, though. That's why I think I was just like, it was just like, it's kind of like if you have a pet peeve, like, that just sticks in your craw, that's one of mine. And I just don't know why, I just don't like it.
Yeah.
Bria's judging me now.
Judging you from a distance.
That's okay.
A little bit.
I'm looking at Grumpy Cat and Disney princesses, so it's all good.
Oh, the perils of having Twitter running while we're podcasting. But I think both Nancy and I can agree with you that this characterization of Leia was spot freaking on.
Yeah. I can't get over it.
The scene with her and the Han in the bathroom was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the fresher.
Context is everything.
And I liked her Luke, too. Because, you know, we don't get it.
I kind of wish this had actually been a big three book.
Yeah.
With Leia as the lead.
Well, I think I said last week I would have liked if it had, like, been a Shadows of Mordor style, where, like, the big three are all in the book, but they're not necessarily all together. That way Leia can shine on her own. You know.
I liked how they did it, just because when we tend to get big, like, three books, Leia sort of ends up inevitably getting the back seat.
Yeah.
Kind of like that she didn't have to compete.
Yeah.
So.
I mean,
also there were.
I do have to say. I do have to say it's kind of ridiculous, though, that people have said that it wasn't. They didn't like the fact that all of the women in power position, all the people in power positions were female, That wasn't realistic. I wanted
sit
to
sit there in your wrongness and be
I
wrong.
I wanted to give them all the middle finger.
I have words for that, but I can't say them all on this podcast.
I really need to get a soundboard so I just have an expletive button handy. But yeah, any of you that have problems with this book and think it was caused by a female author because the author was female and because the characters were female are wrong. You're all wrong. Sorry.
Very wrong.
No, there's no getting around it. You're wrong. Sorry. So those are the big expanded universe releases of the year. There were also some comics that came out. Quick rundown of the big stuff. There were the new Legacy comics, Bria, which you enjoyed.
I do, and they're still being published right now. And you should all go pick them up because the trade of the first volume is coming out this month.
Ooh, yes, definitely go pick that up. And then there was the Brian Wood Star Wars comic.
Do we even need to say anything about this one? I think everyone knows.
If the characterization of Leia is important to you, go read Razor's Edge instead.
Please, I'm begging you.
And that's all we'll say about that.
Can I just say that if they end up, spoilers, if they end up making Wedge be the first Rogue Leader, I am going to be really angry with someone. Because that's not how it worked. I'm sorry, Wedge. I love you, but you were not the first Rogue Leader. Luke was.
And
did you see the movie?
And it's awesome because Rogue Squadron is handed off to the everyman
yes,
character.
Because Luke and Wedge are BFFs, and Luke had to go off and do his Jedi thing and said, "Hey, Wedge, I trust you. You got these guys, even Jansen." So
yes, those are our quick thoughts on the year of Star Wars comics. And one of two last questions. What trends have we noticed in the expanded universe this year?
Standalone character books.
Yes.
Yay.
Standalone books that function as good entry points have been the most successful books this year, or at least the most critically well received.
Yep.
You've got Scoundrels, The Last Jedi, not The Last Jedi, Scoundrels, Into the Void, Kenobi.
Razor's Edge.
Those have probably been the best received books of the year. And that's because they are standalone, largely character-focused books that are easy for any Star Wars fan to just pick up and go. I will say Capable Ladies was a theme this year.
This sounds very familiar, Brian.
It does.
Are you reading it from an article someone wrote?
I might be reading it from an article someone wrote, yes. Capable Ladies. Bria, would you agree?
I think I would. I think I wrote something along the lines of, how we got our strong female leads.
And
capable lady leads.
And the books benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we notice that strong. The books that...
We are invincible.
We are woman.
Brian, don't ever sing that again.
Now, notice that the books that treated female characters well and used them in engaging manners were the books that... fared better critically. Notice that the books that fridged women put
and
them in slinky black dresses and made them fan service candy didn't fare as well. I'm not saying that there's correlation obviously doesn't imply causation, but these books did all had that in common. So, go ahead.
I would have liked The Last Jedi a heck of a lot better if it had treated its female characters better. So,
I would have liked Crucible better if they had treated all of its characters better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's do treat all of your characters better.
So let's do a little bit of a look ahead to 2014. There's only two adult novels on the calendar right now. Mall Lockdown and Honor Among Thieves. Honor Among Thieves I'm very excited for, because James S.A. Corey is a great author duo, and even though Han isn't my favorite character, isn't my all-time favorite character, I'm excited to see what those two can do with him.
I really liked Han in the books in this time period. And although I haven't actually read James S.A. Corey's books before, I have high hopes for them writing Han and Chewie and Star Wars in general, pretty much.
Well, those two authors are pretty well-respected science fiction authors, award-winning science fiction authors. It's a good get for the expanded universe, and I can't wait to see what they do.
Yes, but that's it.
Mall Lockdown, I don't know what to think about that one yet, because I've heard some interesting things about it.
I'll read it and review it.
You sound so excited.
I am excited.
Are you?
I will say I liked Death Troopers, so I'll probably be able to get through this and enjoy it.
Now, we often talk about how over-the-top violence and things like Crucible really takes away from the story, but when it's a genre book, Death Troopers or what appears to be Mall Lockdown, then... okay.
Yeah.
But when it's a mainline flagship,
if I go into a book that's about Darth Maul, like, fighting people in, like, pseudo Thunderdome or whatever, then I expect to have a lot of gore and violence and whatever.
But when you're talking about the big three farewell,
I don't expect Han to lose an eye. And it's all fun and games until someone loses an eye.
I guess a barely used one in return.
So the last question I have is, with a bunch of openings on the publishing calendar next year, what would we like to see?
Books.
I don't know. I think I possibly wrote an article about that that's going up tomorrow.
No. Let's see.
What's on my list anyways?
Well, I can't ask for a Luke book because we're getting that.
Hooray!
In 2015. I will, though.
I actually think they might bump it up.
I wouldn't be surprised. That the Luke book is Luke in Rogue Squadron book. Because I don't have enough Luke in as pilot. And I want that for reasons.
You want that for reasons.
I want that for reasons. I would also like more Empire and Rebellion books.
I would too. I know we talked about this last week on the podcast, but I think Empire and Rebellion is a safe bet, but one that, even though it's safe, could still be really, really interesting. And I'm going to piggyback off of an 1138 article that was published, was it this week or last week, where they were talking about... last week?
This week.
Okay, this week. Time just...
Time keeps on slipping.
Where the writers over at 1138 got together and talked about some expanded universe stuff they'd like to see, and someone pitched a Red Squadron book. So I'm just going to throw this one out there. Empire and Rebellion, : X-Wing, : Red Squadron.
That's a lot of colons.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Star Wars, : Empire and Rebellion, : X-Wing, : Red Squadron.
I would like, well...
Don't forget a Baron Fell.
Since we are just throwing out ideas, I want Mara and Mirax getting rested. I will not rest until I get this book.
You will do anything for Exonerated, won't you?
I want my fanfic to be deemed non-canon.
I mean, is that so, all of our pipe dreams?
Is that it so much to ask?
I mean, what wouldn't it be great to get Mike Stackpole back to write Exonerated?
Well, I already said at Dragon Con next year I'm going to ask him what happened. Preferably in a panel with him and Zahn together.
Well, then we also have to throw Alston and Kevin J. Anderson in for the additional comedic fodder.
Yeah, so Kevin J. Anderson, while you were giggling behind your hands going, I know something you don't know, and writing Luke at the Jedi Academy, what was Mara doing?
Conjugal visits.
But she had to do something in between those.
Getting arrested. Okay, Bria, anything you'd like to see? Yeah, just preview the sample you got.
I make my serious request,
though? Of course.
I want a...
That was your serious request.
No, it wasn't. I want Darth Sidious.
In the vein of Plagueis.
Yes, but I either want it between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, or I want it in the original trilogy with him and Vader, because I think that would be awesome.
Okay, now there's an Empire and Rebellion book that needs to get made.
I want Palpy and Vader scheming.
Do want.
Because you imagine reading the whole throne room scene from Vader's point of view.
We have to get James Luceno for that, right?
James Luceno, whatever. Aaron Alston had said he wanted to do a Vader book in between, like, set in the original trilogy, and he decided not to, and Timothy Zahn had looked at him and was like,
are you nuts?
He was like, you might want to pitch that again. They might go for that now. So, yes.
Any previews from your piece that we may be adding on to personally tomorrow?
Let's see. Well, my pipe dream is still to get Matt Stover writing a prequel trilogy book about Mace and Deppa as Master and Padawan and being awesome, because I love that book. I really want to read it. And then for something that's not on my usual give me these books now list, I want Brian Young to go write a young Padme book. I want a political Padme book, and I want Brian Young to write it. And I know he would write it too if they asked him. So,
can I write the Mara and Mirax book then? Please. I love you, Del Rey.
But we got to think that there are some announcements coming as far as the 2014 release schedule, because there's only two books.
Jen Heddle has said that there's other books on the schedule. They just haven't announced them yet. So.
Yeah, and they're probably trying to avoid the Paul S. Kemp duology vapor again.
Yeah.
They'll wait until it's a little closer and more finalized.
And Sword of the Jedi.
So, Sword of the Jedi.
So close, yet so far.
Yep. Okay. That's Cammy's concerns. Real quick, let's do Ask Us Anything this week. Subtitle, Troll Bria Any Way Possible. Brandon asks, best EU moment of 2013, Bria's Crystal Star livestream, yes or yes? I can't argue with that.
Mara,
get out, all
Mara
of you.
Even
no.
Says yes. Mara says yes.
No.
that was a great moment. It's a shame it's lost to the depths of the internet now.
It was terrible.
Folks, do not live stream your reading of the Crystal Star.
Don't read the Crystal Star.
Especially when you're drunk. Don't do it.
We've got a copy here, lightly chewed on by Mara, the dog.
We do.
Ryan, don't you dare. Don't you dare.
We do.
I think we have to do a contest
The best part is that she didn't eat the whole thing.
Even Mara couldn't
finish
it.
She only nibbled on it, and then it was just unfazed. And she usually shreds books, so she didn't even want to eat it.
I think we're going to have to do a live stream sometime, or not a live stream, a contest sometime in which the gag gift is a lightly chewed on copy of the Crystal Star. And last question from Nut in the chat. How long before Bria does a Ms. Marvel costume?
Probably not.
Fair enough. And that's Ask Us Anything. And that is our podcast for the week. Our look back at 2013 and the expanded universe. Bria, thank you for coming on again. And where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at ChaosBria. You can find me on Tumblr, Corellia or bus.tumblr.com. And then, as always, you can find me on my geek fashion blog, whitehotroom.com.
Excellent. Be sure to check all of that out. And also, be sure to check out our sister podcast, Wrong Opinions About Movies. This week, what did they review this week?
The Counselor, starring Michael Fassbender.
And that movie apparently didn't fare well.
Apparently nothing happened.
But even though nothing happened in the movie, do listen to Wrong Opinions About Movies, because they can find the snark in anything.
Yep.
And with that, we're going to say goodbye to you. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links on the site to help keep the... Oh, yeah, I didn't mean to say that.
Good night, folks. See you later.
Good night, everybody. This episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check out the links on the site to help keep the lights on. On Twitter, we can be found with the handles at Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with at Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with at Lane Winry, LaneWinree. On Facebook, we are the Tashi Station Network. You can find us in the iTunes Store. If you like what you hear, do leave a review. It does help us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi-Station.net. Thank you for listening to another episode, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.